Hello, welcome. We're going to jump into our last set of lectures on regulation of securities. And we're going to now jump into the area of industry self-regulation. We started off, of course, with state regulation. Remember, in New York State, our blue sky law is called the Martin Act. It's enforced primarily through the Office of the New York State Attorney General, which is an independently elected official in New York. And the Martin Act, which was passed in 1921, is the most powerful state regulatory statute in the country on securities regulation. And remember, it has especially important power because even though all of these state blue sky laws are limited to what we call intrastate transactions, that means a transaction of securities that occurs within the state. Remember, because New York State is the home of the New York State Stock Exchange, the New York Stock Exchange, then the Martin Act has application over that. So whereas the federal regulation sought to provide for jurisdiction over those exchanges, the Martin Act already had it. And it's a very broad, very powerful state statute, which has been used very effectively against corporations to be able to try and assure that the marketing of securities is above board, that it is something that you don't have fraud involved, because fraud is obviously not something that is beneficial to either those corporations that are offering it or the investor who purchases it. We just spoke about federal regulation. And federal regulation, although not as broad as the state regulation, it has a broader jurisdiction because it goes all over the United States. And it is based on the Interstate Commerce Clause, where these transactions occur in interstate commerce. Whereas the Martin Act applies to all security transactions, the federal regulation really kind of restricts itself to transactions that occur on a stock exchange, such as the New York State New York Stock Exchange. I keep saying New York State, I'm sorry, it's the New York Stock Exchange, and is traded on a national basis. The federal regulation is based on four statutes, as you may remember. First is the 1933 Act, Securities Act of 1933. Then you have the Securities and Exchange Act of 1934. Then you have the Sarbanes-Oxley Act of 2002. And then the Frank Dodd Act of 2010. With respect to the federal regulation, remember those are all enforced by the Securities Exchange Commission, which was created in the 34 Act. And what they try to do is make sure that not only don't you have things like insider trading going on, but you have a prospectus similar to what the Martin Act requires, where there's a registration of the trader, meaning the person who, the corporate person that is issuing those stocks or bonds, and a disclosure of all their activities. You also have, with respect to the federal regulation, a very broad based of disclosures relating to the corporation itself. You have to have under Sarbanes-Oxley and then under Dodd-Frank, you have a series of requirements where the CEO and CFO of the organizations, the corporations, have to certify that everything that is going into those disclosure statements are accurate. Remember, under Sarbanes-Oxley, you even have a oversight over the accountants to a corporation. So you make sure that Those accountants have to roll off the job periodically so they don't cozy up with their clients. You have to have a certification of all the documentation that gets signed off on as being valid. So both the state and the federal regulation are intended to allow investors, people who purchase the stock, the shareholders, or the bonds, the bondholders, to know what they're buying, to know what the financial position of the corporation is, to make sure that everything is above board and that they understand, not limit what they buy, because you can buy risky investments, and that's okay as long as the purchaser understands there's a lot of risk. It might be a lot of reward, but there's a lot of risk here. What they don't want is having the investor think that there's no risk and a lot of reward. So at the end of the day, it's all about disclosure. It's all about knowledge of the purchaser. And it is about not having fraud, not having deceit, and remember, not having insider trading. That's another thing. We want everybody on a level, fair playing field. Okay. Tonight, our last unit, we're going to talk about industry self-regulation. Why would we rely on the industry itself, the corporations and the trading entities, to regulate themselves? Well, these are things that people buy. And as a result of that, if you want a product that people want to seek out, you want that product to be dependable. And hence, industry self-regulation, you might not think this, but industry self-regulation is actually one of the most effective versions of regulation, rather than the federal government or state government coming in. The industry itself makes sure that its products are something that are dependable, that people have trust in, that they understand that the firms that they're dealing with are fair and above board. The first thing I want to talk about is the Financial Industry Regulatory Authority, which is the largest independent not-for-profit regulator. That is an entity created by the corporations themselves and the trading houses themselves to be able to oversee these and set standards by which this disclosure happens. You also have the National Association of Security Dealers. Those are the people who are dealing the securities, and the New York Stock Exchange, which merged into this FINRA. They previously operated separately to assure these standards. Today they merged into this one entity. And the reason they did that is because they wanted one entity that people could depend on for uniform standards across the board. FINRA is congressionally authorized. It has a mission to seek to protect investors by ensuring that securities and the industry that sells them is fair and honest and reputable. What does this organization do? It writes and enforces rules for securities firms and brokers. It monitors that these entities are complying with the rules. It comes out with strategies that foster market transparency so that people understand what they're buying. It provides for investor education on these different products. It provides for a broker, the people who are selling these, check system, whereby it understands that these entities, these brokers, these stock brokers, are following the rules and that they're being fair and honest, that they're not just turning around and trying to sell product, they're doing it in a responsible, professional way. It also does something which is very important, and that is it refers cases of fraud that it uncovers, because it does monitor these transactions. It refers fraud and insider trading over to the SEC. So it acts as not only a watchdog, but a referral agency as well. And because this agency is a child of the corporations that are selling these securities and the investment houses that are charged with trading them, it has become very effective, and it's an important part of the regulatory process. One of the most important elements, however, is that FINRA has an arbitration process. So rather than going through the courts, you turn around and has one of the largest dispute resolutions for investors and firms. So if I say, hey, listen, I was not given the information I needed to, I can get a dispute resolved with through FINRA, through its arbitration procedures, without having to go to court. This forum has been highly successful. What arbitration is it's a quasi-judicial-like activity whereby it's performed, who are the arbitrators? They're persons who are licensed and authorized to do arbitrations. They're kind of like judges. There's an American Arbitration Association, and they're educated by that. They tend to be lawyers, but they don't have to be. And they take on a judicial-like role. And the way it works is one party will pick one arbitrator, the other party will pick an arbitrator, and then those two arbitrators will pick a third. And that panel of three arbitrators generally oversees the arguments. So you're an investor and think you were defrauded, you go to this panel and say, I was defrauded, here's why. And the issuing stock entity, whether it be the corporation itself or the trader who's a third party, comes in and says, no, they weren't defrauded. We provided all this disclosure. And the three arbitrators look at that and say, yes, he was defrauded, or no, he wasn't defrauded, or there was an unclear pathway here so that he ought to be provided with some degree of remedy, maybe not the full remedy that he's asking, but some degree of remedy. These arbitrations are highly successful because they're less expensive than litigation, they're also highly respected by courts. Arbitration decisions are rarely overturned by courts because they use the same methodology that a court would use in order to determine who was there. There's due process, there's an opportunity to be heard, which is also afforded in a courtroom. But it's less expensive than litigation. The evidentiary standards are not quite as high as a litigation one, so you can bring in outside evidence as well. And generally, it is well regarded by both investors and the trading companies as well. And it has worked very successfully. Industry self-regulation has been one which we said has been the most successful because the industry who wants to trade and offer securities, that's stocks and bonds of the corporation, whether it be the corporation itself or third-party trading brokers, people like the Merrill Lynch's of the world, people like the Charles Schwab's of the world, these brokerage houses, they want you to trust their products because you're more likely to buy a product that you trust. So they have skin in the game to make sure that you have confidence in what you're buying, that you understand what you buy. It doesn't do any good to pull the wool over your eyes. Why? Because you're not then going to buy it again from them. You're not going to trust them again. So industry self-regulation, together with the federal regulation and state regulation we have talked about, has provided for a very positive network, which is dramatically improved where investor protection has been sought. And as a result of that, you have much more secure, much more informed investors, and you have happier sellers and issuers of securities out there through corporations and the brokerage houses. Why? Because when you have happy customers, you have people who sell the product be happy too, because they're willing to pay more for it, they're willing to buy it again. And as a result of that, this network of securities regulation has proven highly successful. That being said, any regulation can be overboard, and you've seen things like the Consumer Financial Protection Board, which has gone somewhat overboard and has had a backlash, and it somewhat provides a disincentive for people to invest. So what we're seeking to have through all this regulation is have an open, free, and fair investment process where people can invest, where they can buy the stocks and bonds, where they can become shareholders in a corporation, but also do such knowingly. And that limited liability acts as a magnet to be able to do that. So there is protections, there is freedom of investment, and those two things come together in a very successful way. We're next going to go on to our case, SEC versus W.J. Howie Company. It's an interesting case about an orange grove in Florida. We'll see you shortly. Thanks so much.